Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Nintendo Wirecast. I'm one of your hosts, Hiro TJ, and with me is the tireless, conquering champion of collectible figures, Amiibo Jason.
That's a new one. Every week, you outdo yourself by introducing me, but thank you. It's good to be back for episode 15. Super exciting stuff. Right off the heels of a Nintendo Direct, I'm playing retro games again, which is fun. So I think we got some good topics tonight. So how are you, more importantly? I haven't talked to you in a week.
I'm doing great. I actually have to say I've really been enjoying these weekly check-ins with you, Jason. It's funny how we had to move on opposite sides of the world to have this consistent and regular contact.
It's kind of sad in its own way, but
I know.
At the same time, too, I'm very happy to see you, as always.
Likewise.
We have blizzard-like conditions going on outside, at least here in Wisconsin. If you're in the Midwest, chances are you're about to get hit with a massive storm by the time I get this episode up, which tends to be days after we record. The storm should have already hit, so hopefully you guys are safe and sound and nice and warm. But right now you guys might hear some crazy wind, hail, rain, Armageddon completely going on outside right now. So good stuff.
I'm a Midwestern boy in my heart, Chicago born and raised, even though I lived in LA for 13 years. But here in Taiwan, it is an unseasonably warm 70 degrees.
Oh.
I forgot that it was even winter time. And I don't say this to rub it in because I actually love me some winter. I am going to miss making the snowmen and having snowball fights with my kids. But the way that seasons are celebrated out here are a little bit different. Christmas is celebrated, but it's a little holiday. And we're now entering into the big holiday, the most important holiday in Taiwan.
Chinese New Year?
I think Chinese New Year. And it's a big deal.
What is it? Year of the Rat? This year?
Year of the Rat, yes. Yeah. Do you know what you are?
I have no clue what I am. I'm assuming...
What year were you born?
1985.
You are an ox, good sir.
Oh, man. It's kind of
powerful.
Lame.
No, the ox is powerful.
Okay, I'll take that.
I'm a rooster, so...
You are kind of a... yeah.
Yes. I like to puff out my chest and strut my stuff, but at the end of the day, I'm still a chicken.
I don't know about that. Speaking of New Year, this is kind of off topic, but it's Nintendo related, so it works out. One of my New Year's resolutions, which number one, I think are stupid to begin with. I'm not a fan of New Year's resolutions for the most part. But a resolution I made to myself this year was to complete video games that I've been wanting to complete for years on the original systems. So no emulation, just good old-fashioned retro gameplay. So right now, I am playing Golden Sun on the Game Boy Advance, which I am having a blast with. I picked that game up when I was a kid. I think I got about halfway through the game, and my Game Boy Advance broke. The screen cracked. I was broke, I was a poor kid, and I did not have enough money to get another one, so I just stopped my adventure right there. So that's my first one, and I am getting upset. Have you played Golden Sun, by the way?
I played it to completion.
Okay. I'm stuck right now at this boss called the Kraken. And
I do remember fighting the Kraken.
He is a jerk. I do not like him. I was pretty much playing this game since I got home today, and I cannot beat this boss. So that's where I am right now. After that, I have an entire back catalog of other retro games I'm going to play. Chrono Trigger's on the list. For some reason, you're watching this on a video cast. I picked up Golden Sun: The Lost Age, which is the direct sequel to Golden Sun, but I have to beat the first one first for that to happen.
Yes, and it actually transfers some data.
It does.
I do remember playing all the way through the first game and then buying the second game because I did really enjoy it, but I think, unless I'm having some big gap in my memory, that the last time-consuming RPG that I ever played, Pokemon notwithstanding, was Golden Sun. And I played it in my early 20s.
All right.
And so by the time that the next one came out, I had just finished college and or maybe I was in the middle of college, but I had moved away from home. And suddenly my time that I was able to allot to video games became a lot slimmer.
Yeah.
And one of the first things to go was games that were immensely time consuming. So I transferred my data, and I probably played it for maybe one or two sit downs, and then after that, I did have to abandon it.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed my time with the first one. I do think I will never be able to go back.
I'm very close, I think, to beating it. It's fun, though. I mean, I think the sad thing is I get really, really attached to JRPGs, like incredibly attached. Even games that I haven't beaten or even played, the lore, the story, the characters, the music, all of that is just fascinating to me. It's one of the reasons why I like Chrono Trigger so much, and I've never beaten the game. The music is just fantastic. At work, if it's like I need to concentrate on some code, I'll throw the Chrono Trigger soundtrack on and just kind of veg out. So that is on my list of games to complete. Final Fantasy II on the Super Nintendo is on the list.
I played that one really deep into the game, and the story was so impactful to me.
Did you beat it?
I never beat it.
Oh, man.
I think I was at like the second to last boss, or maybe I was at the last boss, but I don't know if you have to fight him more than once.
Yeah.
I don't know what exactly follows the game, because there were a few times where I thought that I was going to beat it or close to beating it, but the story continued. And it took a lot of really unexpected, surprising, and gut-wrenching turns.
Yeah.
That game did things that no game I had ever played previously had done, and it affected me emotionally in ways I didn't know a game could. So in that way, it really sticks out to me. I had a hard time getting into it, like most RPGs.
Yeah.
But once I became invested in the characters, it was something that I really wanted to see through. And I know I will never, ever be able to put that time back into it.
Yeah.
But the story was powerful.
See, my issue with RPGs right now is, and I have no doubt that that must be a very fantastic game, it's not that I have a lack of time. And I do have a lack of time to a certain degree. But I tend to find RPGs that I like, and I play them over and over and over again. So Final Fantasy VI or III in the US, I beat that game about 8 or 9 times, maybe even 10. Final Fantasy VII, I've played to completion 5 to 6 times, 8, 5 to 6 times, 9, 3 to 4 times, 10. Oh my God, I don't even want to tell you how many times I've beaten Final Fantasy X. So
wow.
It's just a matter of like I get in moods and I get really nostalgic and I'm like, I want to go through this entire game again because I want to be where I was when I played this game initially, in my mom's basement with my bowl of Cheetos and my Mountain Dew, you know, the whole stereotypical gamer thing right there. So I have made the resolution this year to change that. I am going to go through these games and finally have the street cred I deserve for JRPGs. So I can't have Lauren mock me anymore for never beating Chrono Trigger. So that's going to be next. So I had to just point that out because we were talking about the Year of the Rat. So the Year of the Rat is the year of the RPG for me.
Nice. Well, so, they both start with R. So you got that going
do.
For you.
They do. TJ, what do you want to talk about today?
Well, last episode, we did a big segment on Amiibo and the state of Amiibo.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that we don't always release the podcast in its entirety on YouTube, but we did release that segment at least because a big selection of our followers are into Amiibo, and that's kind of why they follow us in the first place. So we are really, I would say, preaching to the choir, or we're really talking to the congregation. These are not people who are curious about Amiibo. These are the dedicated Amiibo people.
Yeah.
And it always surprises me, and it comes up in conversation a lot now that we're, because of the state of Amiibo, where they're not releasing constantly. The waves are few and far between. There are only 2 to 3 Amiibo that are released at a time when they do. So the conversation is often towards, is this the end? Are we nearing the end? What's next? And it shocks me how offended, how personally offended people get at the suggestion that Nintendo might be moving away from Amiibo.
I mean,
is that something that surprises you?
I mean, it's difficult for me to have these conversations because Amiibo mean a lot to me. We are a week away from Richter and Dark Samus. And after that, we are going into uncharted territory, which we discussed.
Uncharted territory. Yes.
It's we are going into deep, dark, uncharted space. And it makes me feel very uncomfortable. And having the conversation that that Nintendo might be shifting gears from Amiibo is a difficult conversation to have, but we have to look at the facts. You have to look at the absolute lack of first-party games with Amiibo support, something you would never see 3 years ago. They shoehorned Amiibo into everything, whether it was
everything.
Decent or not decent. And every time Nintendo releases a new cover for a game, I scour it. I'm like, is there an Amiibo logo somewhere on here? And there's not. And that just makes me incredibly sad. We are getting the one-off games, like we saw with Link's Awakening, where there is Amiibo, but we are way past the days where people seem to, I don't know, care about the collecting aspect of Amiibo. I've mentioned it before. You go into a store, and there are Amiibo on the shelf from the latest Smash wave, and that never would have happened 2 to 3 years ago. It wouldn't. They'd be gone instantly. There'd be lines outside. Those days are over, and that's fine. People move on. Things are different, and that's totally fine. Amiibo had a great run, and if Nintendo wants to keep putting them out, I will keep buying them, but we're definitely getting to a point where I don't think they're necessarily done because, as we mentioned last week, I do believe the DLC fighters are going to get Amiibo in some way, shape, or form. But it's not the way it was. Not every major release is going to get Amiibo support or Amiibo at all. We have no confirmation yet that Animal Crossing is even getting Amiibo support. It's not on the box, so at least on the front. Maybe it's on the back. So I think that's going to be the nail in the coffin. You mentioned what was it? You said
Breath of the Wild 2. Yeah. I think that's the nail in the coffin. If the most top-selling Amiibo character of all time, who has far more Amiibo than any other character bar none, does not get a new Amiibo or Amiibo support with Breath of the Wild 2, especially given how amazing and well-received the Amiibo integration was with the first Breath of the Wild, then that's the final nail in the coffin to me.
That might be the final. I think maybe one nail in the coffin is going to be if Animal Crossing comes and goes with no Amiibo support. Because by and large, there are more Animal Crossing Amiibo than any other type of Amiibo on the market.
Absolutely.
And if they just say, over 500. I mean, that's it. I mean, that would be shocking to me. I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's going to be some Amiibo support to some degree. But are we going to see Nintendo put Amiibo cards back on store shelves? I doubt it. I mean, if you go to Five Below, which is like a discount store here in the Midwest, I think it's all over the place, there are Animal Crossing Amiibo that they can't give away. Nintendo's not going to keep manufacturing these things because people aren't going to buy them. So that leads me to the question, if people aren't buying them, is there even a point in putting it in this latest game? So I'm super curious to see if any support whatsoever is going to be in this. I'm mixed. I really am. But I'm with a lot of the people, like the people in the comments. Like, I don't like talking about the end of this because you and I would not be talking if it wasn't for Amiibo.
It's true. Amiibo brought us together.
My life would be drastically different right now if it wasn't for Amiibo. So trust me, this isn't me like wanting this to happen. It's me.
Right.
Seeing the train coming and hoping that it shifts tracks, you know, before it runs me over. But
see, I'm very similar to you with that in one respect, and then I think we differ in another way. We're the same in that I love Amiibo. I absolutely do. I'm thankful for all of the fun experiences that they've provided in my life, well beyond just being a collectible toy that I enjoy using and I enjoy having. The camaraderie that has emerged out of it, the content I've been able to generate from them, the relationships I've been able to form that directly stemmed from Amiibo, I have a tremendous appreciation for all of that. But I also have a little bit of a sense where I'm looking outside of myself. And if I look at, as long as they continue to make them, I'll continue to buy them. I'm not like jumping Amiibo ship. But 6 years ago, I did not even know that Amiibo existed. I did not even know that this aspect of my life would come about. And in that way, Nintendo has continued to delight and surprise.
Yeah.
So when out of the blue, Nintendo could generate this new product that sparked so much interest and creativity out of me, I can't lament them moving on to something new because we don't know what the next Amiibo is.
But
if Nintendo's track record is any indication, there's a good chance that there's going to be something else awesome on the horizon. And if Amiibo do finish, that's not a sad thing. It was a fun adventure. All things come to an end. And I think that Amiibo will never be gone because the games that they were made for, like Smash Brothers, will exist throughout mankind. That's never going away. And the figures and the collectors, they will always have them. They will always be there. There's going to be this niche group of custom artists out there, myself included, who are going to continue to modify these figures to create figures that Nintendo never got around to. And there's also something, while there's an excitement about what's coming next, there's also a sense of closure knowing that something is over. Yeah. So right now, there are zero people in the world who have a complete Amiibo collection, because there are at least two Amiibo that have not been released yet. Probably, presumably, the rest of the Smash Brothers line is out there too, and whatever other secrets Nintendo is holding. But as a collector, all collectors, I think, have some little bit of completionism in them, where you want to be able to complete your collection. And until the line is finished, you cannot obtain a complete collection. So that's the final, ultimate level of the Amiibo collector, is when you can definitively say how many there are.
Yeah. I agree to a certain degree. It's tough to think about the end of it. I still have weird thoughts that DLC fighters might not get them, but at the same time too, I still think it's probably going to happen. So we still have some time left with Amiibo. So don't lament its passing, at least right now. We have a steady stream of Amiibo coming, assuming Nintendo keeps them going for the DLC fighters, which is likely. But when it does end... Oh, go ahead.
We were expecting that we were going to see a Nintendo Direct soon, because we know that we have at least one outstanding Smash fighter.
Yeah.
And the news for 2020 games are light. And we did get that Direct, but it wasn't what anybody thought it would be.
Yeah, I mean, we did get a Pokemon Direct, which, I mean, number one, I mean, I'm not a massive Pokemon fan, so it did very little for me. But I'm shocked that we saw a Pokemon Direct instead of a dedicated Nintendo Direct. So we're definitely going to touch base on that. It's bizarre to me that that's what happened, but we are running out of time before, the next Smash Fighter is even supposed to be coming out. So I'm shocked that we haven't seen anything yet. We've been predicting a Nintendo Direct since November, and here we are in January, almost mid-January now, and still nothing. So here's hoping maybe next week or the week after. I still think it's going to happen sometime in January. I think it has to. But who knows? Nintendo has been playing some mind games with us when it comes to Directs, and every leak that I've seen has been dead wrong about when it's going to happen, so I think it's anybody's guess at this point. Real quick, though, before we move on to the Direct, I do want to point out real quick that if you do want some sort of proof that Nintendo still does care about Amiibo to at least some degree, Smash just got a 2v2... tag team Amiibo tournament starting.
I'm glad you brought this up, because that creates an opportunity for me to do something that I've been wanting to do forever in Smash, which is play as Hero TJ, who is my Mii Sword Fighter main, and then be accompanied by Amiibo Dark TJ.
Nice.
Which is a super cool video game experience that I could do against the computer, but I haven't had any real meaningful way to be able to do. And so I think I'm going to try to do that for this tournament. Are you going to get involved with one of your Amiibo buddies?
You know, I might. So I don't know if you've ever heard of Amiibo Dojo. It's a site that pretty much helps you train Amiibo. I might take them up on some offers to help me train some Amiibo and take a look and see what I can do. I've never been shy about why I collect Amiibo, and it's not to fight them. It's not to use them. It's to take them out of the box and put them on my shelf and never use them again. And that's just the way I like it. I mean, I've used Amiibo in Smash, but do not ask me about which moves or fighting, you know, style is best for this amiibo because, or this, you know, this fighter, because I don't know. I sincerely don't know. That's not why I collect these things. So, if I do it, I'm going to have to do some very quick amiibo training, and it's been some time since I've done that, for sure.
Well, the metagame is a lot more streamlined in Ultimate because there are a lot fewer options, where in Wii U and 3DS, you could customize the move sets.
Yeah.
You could, and you had a lot to choose from. And that was really one of the most fun things about amiibo, I thought. And when you migrate them to Ultimate, they all have the same exact move set. So really the differences that you're going to have between amiibo are a lot more nuanced and less like in your face,
yeah,
because they can't go in with completely different sets of moves this time around. And to me, that's a little bit of a diminished experience, but it's okay. I'm glad that they're still there, and I'm glad they still do stuff, and I'm glad that Nintendo is highlighting them a little bit and giving them a little bit of Smash love.
So that tournament started today, right?
I believe so.
Okay, so today is, by the way, we're recording this on January 10th, so the tournament could be over by the time you listen to this, but you never know.
Yes, and I just want to point out, for me, it's actually January 11th.
Oh, okay, nice.
I'm on the other side of the world. My son's birthday.
Well, happy birthday to him. My sister's birthday. So.
All right. Good day.
All right. I think that's everything I have on Amiibo. I'm excited for next week, Friday. Part of me is hoping Nintendo announces a Direct before Friday so we don't have to go through that weird Uncharted territory. I want to know that there are Amiibo coming. I sincerely do. So here's my hope. Here's my prediction. On Tuesday, we're going to get a tweet from Nintendo. It's going to come out at 8 or 9 a.m. It's going to say there's a Direct on Thursday. On Thursday, they're going to announce the next wave. That's my prediction. Here's hoping.
My prediction is that there is definitely going to be a Direct, and it is definitely going to be very soon, because there has never been a Fighter's Pass character released without at first being detailed in an announcement.
Yeah.
So I think it would be very strange if Nintendo were not to do that. So another Direct is a foregone conclusion. Whether or not that Smash info will be dropped in a larger body of work that includes other Nintendo titles, I can't say for certain. But the Smash one is an inevitability, and it is going to happen 100% for sure before February 29th.
All right. You heard it here. Right here.
100% for sure.
100% TJ guarantees.
I am guaranteeing that we are going to get some more Smash information, probably in a Direct format, for Smash Brothers specifically before February 29th, because that's the final release date for the character, and Nintendo's reinforced that final release date. So it's not like I'm making a bold prediction. I'm just literally reiterating what Nintendo themselves have stated.
You're playing it safe. I respect that. Playing it safe.
Well, Nintendo likes to mix things up, and they like to surprise. So I don't really see a whole lot of value in trying to guess what they're going to do, at least with respect of when they release stuff. And I can't stand, I will put this in my number one social media hates, is people trying to trick people into thinking that things are happening that are not happening. I'm all for speculating.
Yeah.
People guessing and all those was great. But people who are retweeting old Direct tweets, and people who are fabricating and doctoring tweets to try to make it look like a Direct is happening when it's not, that nonsense needs to stop. Grow up, people.
Agreed.
You're making me crazy with that stuff. I cannot just look at stuff for what it's worth at face value anymore. I actually find that I have to scrutinize things to see in which way it was altered, because people be tools out there. So quit it if you're doing that. No one likes it.
TJ has spoken.
TJ has spoken. But we did get a Direct, and we have talked, not at length, but we've talked about Pokemon Sword and Shield before on this podcast, and you bought it. I didn't. I went on record as saying that I have nothing against the game. I've bought every mainline Pokemon title in the past. This is the first one that I straight up skipped. I didn't play Sun and Moon, even though I did buy it. And I think that that's what contributed to me not purchasing this one, is if Sun and Moon couldn't grab my interest, there was nothing really new about this experience that made me feel like I could handle the game loop of this yet again. I've played everyone, and maybe I've outgrown it a little bit. But what I will say is that in the wake of this Direct, I felt a stirring of interest. I felt a stirring of intrigue. And I can tell you why that is for me, and I'm a little curious how this impacted you and maybe the greater Pokemon gaming community at large. The things that interested me is I almost never played the interstitial titles of Pokemon, where they would iterate on the same generation, like Omega Ruby Sapphire. Yeah. I played Red and Blue, and then I played Yellow because I really wanted to play as Pikachu.
Yeah.
But then I played Pokemon Silver, but I didn't play like any Crystal. Remakes of... I didn't play Crystal.
Yeah.
I skipped that. I didn't play... Was it... I don't even know the names. Diamond, Pearl. Well, there was Diamond, Pearl.
Yeah, Diamond, Pearl, Platinum.
And then they made Platinum. I didn't play Platinum. So I skipped those ones because I felt like they were just rehashing of what I already did. So this moving in the direction of expanded content to the game that I already played, where I get carryover save data and I get to expand the adventure that I already had, the promise of more really dramatically appeals to me, where you're not starting over and rehashing the same thing. You're continuing the adventure that you already started and digging even deeper.
Yeah.
That has a strong appeal to me. And I guess it bears mentioning, did you watch the Direct live?
I did, yes.
So they played, I want to confirm this isn't just the Taiwan stream. They replayed that trailer 3 times in a row on a loop.
They did. I think it was a glitch on their side.
Yeah.
But they did, yes.
So that was a little weird. It took me about halfway through the second time to be like, this isn't new information. They just literally showed us this. But yeah, they almost like seamlessly looped it. So there was no real conclusion and then starting over. It was just like kept going. And at the third time, I'm like, okay, this is a mistake because there's no way that they think we want to watch it this many times in a row. And then also awkwardly, it ended mid-sentence before they had a chance to conclude their final thoughts. I did go back and watch the official rebroadcast of it for their posted one just to see what information I had missed. And both Isle of Armor and the Crown Tundra are two DLC packs that you cannot parse out. You have to purchase them both simultaneously. The Isle of Armor will release in June of this year, and the Crown Tundra will release in the fall, and that comes with a price tag of $29.99, which is half of the price of the base game.
Yep.
To me, I don't have any problem with that. If you were to buy one of the interstitial titles, which is almost no new content, and pretty much a rehashing of the previous experience, you're going to drop another $30 probably, because we're talking about portable titles at this time. And that's typically what they cost, maybe $35 for some of the later titles, or $40. So to me, the idea of spending $60 for Switch games, pretty standardized right now, I think that's a pretty fair price. And then to have $30 for an expansion pack is all around a better deal, in my opinion. So I don't have any problems with that price. I've seen some blowback, but most people seem pretty lukewarm on it. So I want to know what your thoughts are on any of those ideas.
So from a Pokemon perspective, I don't care. I have the game. I do. I love me some Wooloo. I do. From a Pokemon perspective, I don't care because, number one, I haven't beat the game. I have no desire to beat the game, and I felt this way last gen about, I'd say, 80% of the way through the story, I just wanted to stop, and that was Sun and Moon. And I made it through, but I forced myself to make it through, and I came to a conclusion that I'm sick of the formula. I don't have the attraction to it anymore that I used to. That being said, I have played some of Sword and Shield so far. I really do enjoy the wild area. I think it's fantastic. I think it's a cool new kind of experience for Pokemon and stuff like that I like. But that's such a small portion of the game in comparison to go from town to town, fight random people, catch Pokemon, battle in a gym. I mean, we've done this all before. I wish the entire game was like the wild area. I'd be jumping all over it. I mean, most of the time, I think I've invested about 30 to 40 hours into the game so far, and I've spent all of that either in the wild area or shiny hunting. I mean, those are the two things that appeal to me in this game. So the DLC, I mean, I'm happy that fans are going to get more Pokemon into the national decks. So 200 Pokemon more, I'm sure people are happy about that. It's not technically behind a paywall because they're unlocking it for everybody. And if you have Pokemon Bank, or you could trade with somebody who has the DLC, so you're not forced to get it if you want your favorite Pokemon. So yes, I think good job, Game Freak. That's a solid thing to do. But
although, to be fair, we don't know the details of Pokemon Home, so
not quite
it
yet.
It may still be locked behind a paywall because you're going to have to
pay for pony Pokemon up some Home.
Yeah.
But worst case scenario, the absolute worst case would be you have to trade with a friend who has the DLC, and you could technically get those Pokemon. But
yeah,
like I said before,
which is cool. I agree with you there. That's pretty cool.
From a game perspective, I don't care about this DLC in the least. Because I'm just sick of the Pokemon formula. I'm done. I say I'm done when I put 30 plus hours into the game and I bought a Wooloo. I'm not done. I mean, when I say I'm done, I'm done being invested in the mainline, like Pokemon adventures. Like I stopped getting excited about it. But I do think that the way they're going with this DLC is the most solid way they could go. So yeah. I'm happy about that.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think that might be what I'm the most excited about. Not necessarily the Pokemon game, but the rollout plan, the way that they're integrating this DLC. I think that with DLC that is post-game targeted.
Yeah.
Now, I did not play Sword and Shield yet at all. So I don't really know in what way you're able to access this new content outside of having completed the game. Obviously, you'll probably be able to get new Pokemon from the moment that you get it, even if you haven't beat the game. But how deep you can dig into this DLC before you've beat it, I don't know.
Yeah. I think you have to beat it, if I had to guess. I think that it's all going to be endgame content.
Now, that to me is super awesome and in some ways risky, because with Smash Brothers DLC, you get instant access to what you purchased. With Breath of the Wild, you almost get instant access to the what you've purchased. Not all of that's post-game. There
with
are
the
a few
exception
in-game
of Champions
events.
Ballad.
You still, it's not post-game. You
was
still
that not post-game?
Have,
I thought it was, but maybe it was just because
no.
I had it beat.
It's unlocked. It's locked behind the Divine Beasts. So once you've defeated all the Divine Beasts, then the Champion's Ballad opens up to you. So it does have some in-game events that you have to complete. But to be able to sell something to somebody with the foreknowledge that they're not going to be able to use it, it's the promise of something yet to come, is a little bit of a risky business proposition. And so I think that, but as a gamer who is deeply invested in the game, I wish that Breath of the Wild DLC was post-game.
Yeah.
Because I wanted more. I finished the game. I loved the game. I put 1,000 hours in the game twice. I 100%ed it twice on Switch and Wii U. And I'm hungry for that game in a way that I think it exceeds the average human being. Most people, they beat it. That's probably enough. But I'm into it, and I want more of it.
Yeah.
And I want the adventure to continue. So if the way that Nintendo's doing this Pokemon DLC is an indication of how they might approach DLC for Breath of the Wild 2, which obviously we don't even have Breath of the Wild 1 yet, so I'm putting the cart way before the horse here, but I don't think it's an unfair assumption that we might see DLC for Breath of the Wild 2, because we did see DLC for the first Breath of the Wild, and it sold well, so there's a strong chance that we could see that. For that to be post-game, I think would be super awesome. And I hope that this is very successful to Nintendo, where it emboldens them to, instead of feeling like they need to create a new Mario Kart. They need to create a new Smash Brothers. They need to create a sequel to this, a sequel to that. They do start to explore the options of a game as a service, where they just continue to expand on a very successful game and support it over an extended period of time. Now, I'm not suggesting a subscription service, because I think most people aren't there yet. That is an obnoxious thing at this point. I subscribed to Mario Kart Tour for all of 1 month and I had enough. If they did something like that with Zelda and it was as compelling of an experience as past Zelda games, I probably would feel compelled to do it. But if they're going to say, hey, every 6 months or so, you can drop another $30 and have a new adventure in this world that you already love, whether it be Pokemon or Mario Kart or Zelda, I would be all for that.
So it sounds a lot like a season pass that we see with EA and a lot of stuff they do. I see where you're going with it, but I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Yes, please.
Number one, Sword and Shield came out in November, and it is January, and they already want half of the price of the game more from us. I mean, I just gave them $60 less than 2 months ago, and now they're asking for another $30 right now in January. My point is, my concern is, if this is a successful model for them, which I'm sure it will be, it's Pokemon, what are they going to break up that could have potentially be or could have potentially been in the main game initially? But they're like, they could say, well, we could sell this to these people in 2 months for $30 extra, or we could put it in the main game. So my there's so many, like, I'm gonna give you an example of Pokemon Gold and Silver.
Yeah.
So that game, the end game was an entirely new region. The end game of Gold and Silver was you get to play through Kanto again.
Which is why it is hands down still the best Pokemon game of all time.
Yeah, I mean, it was mind-blowing.
It blew my mind. That might be the most mind-blowing post-game of any game I've ever played.
Yeah, it was just not expected whatsoever. Would that happen?
And also why I was disappointed with every other Pokemon game I've played after Silver. Okay. So they peaked with Generation 2. Every time I thought, are they going to let me do this again? And yeah. Of course, no.
I mean, I don't think we would see that nowadays, because they know they could milk that as DLC.
Yeah.
That's my concern, that this is a $60 AAA game.
Yes.
There are issues with Sword and Shield that I've encountered from a slowdown perspective. And in my personal opinion, and again, if you like Pokemon, this is not me saying don't like Pokemon. Good for you. I love that you love Pokemon. I still love Pokemon. But is Pokemon Sword and Shield a $60 game? I don't know if that's something that I'm willing to say. And now they want $30 more. So you're going to have to ask me in 2 months, is Pokemon Sword and Shield a $90 game? Maybe it is. Maybe it is to you. It's definitely not to me.
That is a really, really good point. I'm glad you brought that up, because you're putting a little bit of trust in the business ethics of the company. Because certainly, as we have seen other companies do before, you withhold release date content in order to be able to sell it at a premium later on. And there were times where, I hate to keep referencing Breath of the Wild, but when they announced the DLC so early after the release of the game, like it was almost like, here's the game, and guess what? There's also going to be DLC. People were like, what do you mean there's going to be DLC for a game that we don't even have yet, or that we just bought?
Yeah.
Why didn't you just put this in the game? I think that with how sparse the details were at the time, it was almost impossible to really say whether or not these were things that they could have put in the base game. I think in hindsight, people generally are of the opinion that most of that content required the additional development time. And some of the reason why it was not in the base game was because in order to make the scheduled release date, they needed a little bit more of a working window to be able to complete that DLC. And to me, that's the best case scenario, where if you're going to get a game out to the consumer, you're not holding completed content or not including content that should have been in it, but you couldn't finish on time. But you're developing content that was never originally intended to have been put in the first game. Or maybe it was originally intended to be put in, but with the idea that it needed to be DLC in advance. You can't withhold things that are supposed to be in that original game. And you can't withhold features that should be in the original game. I think the biggest criticism of Breath of the Wild was hard mode. They're like, no, hard mode should have been part of the base game. And I can get on board with that. I think Trial of the Sword, fine, that could be DLC, but hard mode, maybe that should have been some base game stuff, just like it was for almost every other Zelda game that included it. And here we have with Pokemon, they're adding a bunch of new Pokemon. They are adding two new, I don't know what you even call them, because still the details are a little bit sparse. Adventures? Did these involve new gyms? Maybe. They definitely involve new Pokemon. They have a new legendary catching area where you can team up with other people.
Yep.
Do all of these things justify that $30 price tag? We don't know at this time, but I sure would hate to think, as you have suggested, the very distinct possibility that companies could get the idea in their mind where they take features from a game, strip them out just to separately package them and sell them back to people at a later time.
No.
I don't think that's the case here, because I do think that the Pokemon company struggled to meet this deadline. I don't know what they're doing there. I don't know what Game Freak is, what goes into developing a Pokemon game, but I imagine, as any creator knows, if you're a consumer of content, you don't get it. You don't understand. If you're a creator of content of any kind, you're a musician, you're a filmmaker, you are a game developer, everything takes longer than you think. Everything is harder than you think. Every video I've ever made for Nintendo Wire, for my own personal channel, any film I've ever made as a filmmaker, any set I've ever been on in a professional capacity, from the A-list talent to the lowest student film, everything takes longer than you think. And that's just part of what the creative medium involves, is time. So I believe 100% of the time, whether this was intended to be in the base game or not, they struggled to get you what they got you. And even still, it has problems that they could have worked out had they had more time, like bugs and frame rate issues and all that other stuff. So they need this time. Should they charge you for the time? I think that's another question. It's been suggested with Smash Brothers that Piranha Plant was originally intended to be included in the base game, but he couldn't be finished in time. I don't know if this is true. This is pure speculation. I can't remember where I heard it from. But if that's the case, then giving him for free as a bonus for buying the Fighter's Pass, they're giving you something that they could sell, but it was something that they were going to give you for free anyway if he was done in time. I don't really know. If you meant something to be in the base game, like some of the Mario Maker 2 updates that happened, yeah, you just give those out for free. If it's something that should have been in the game, but you couldn't finish it on time, you need to meet your deadline, and you have to have extra content, I have no problem with you fixing your game or completing your game with DLC, but then you can't charge for that kind of stuff.
So I'm hesitant on even discussing this topic because of how polarizing it is and how toxic everything surrounding about Pokemon is. And I have always been in the camp of, I will never tell you what games you should play and what you should enjoy. If you enjoy something, you enjoy it. And if I don't, that's totally fine. I have nothing against Pokemon or its fan community or Sword and Shield. I don't. I've enjoyed pieces of the game, but Pokemon is the most valuable property on the planet. Like, that's not me even being remotely, like,
there's optimistic. No hyperbole here. Yeah, you're right. This is not hyperbole. Pokemon is the most valuable property on the planet.
And this is the first mainline Pokemon series game on a home console. And I firmly believe we deserved better. And you could say development time or small teams or whatever. But Game Freak owns, if I remember, 25% of the overall Pokemon company. Like, they have a 25% stake in the most valuable property on the planet. And I still firmly believe that we deserved better than Sword and Shield. And I will continue to think that. And if you don't agree, I am totally fine with that. I will never try to change your opinion on that. I think they are still fun games, but they're the exact same games with minor tweaks that I've been playing since I was 10. And maybe that's where the appeal is. Maybe it is. But I will tell you, during the Direct, I rolled my eyes more times than I can tell you, because they kept showing this concept art. Like, look at this work in progress. And I'm like, BS, you have this
And they
stuff.
Really kept showing it. Yeah. They kept showing it.
Because they knew if they showed us, like, all the in-game assets and the 3D models, which I guarantee you are done. They're done. They had at least enough to show us something that wasn't the concept art that they were really pushing for this video. But they knew if they showed that stuff 2 months after release, people would be scratching their head saying, wait a minute, why am I paying you $30 for this stuff that you clearly have at least somewhat ready to go 2 months after the games come out? That's where I am with it. Like I said, I think that when you are the biggest franchise on the planet, you're going to find ways to milk money out of your fan base because you know they're going to pay it. And chances are I'm going to pay it too. I have a daughter who loves Pokemon, and I have an entire team of people that love Pokemon. And yes, I do love Pokemon to a certain degree too. I don't feel great about it. I just don't. I don't see Sword and Shield plus two additional adventures worth $90. I just don't. But that's where I'll leave it.
You know, I predicted in our last episode, if you recall, that in 2020, we were going to receive the announcement of Pokemon DLC. Obviously, I had no insider knowledge of this, but am I surprised that there is Sword and Shield DLC? No, I literally predicted it 1 week ago. But did I think we were going to get it less than 1 week later? No, I did not. So, two weeks into the year, I didn't give a window on this. I'm not surprised at when the release is. I would have guessed it would be around the fall of this year, because they typically do iterative titles or the interstitial titles a year later or thereabouts so that they can have their annual Pokemon release. But this was so close to the release date of the game that you bring up a really good point. Would it have been better to sit on this knowledge, sit on this announcement another 3 months? Or should they have saved this for E3 and said, and boom, one of them's out now? In my opinion, I think they should have. I think that they should have not said a single word, dropped this at E3, said, and guess what? One of them is available today, and you'll get the other one in a couple months.
Yeah. I could see that going over a bit better. But at the same time, too, fans seem happy about it. And again, I'm not the person to talk to on this because I am a casual Pokemon player at best. This is not my franchise. And
yeah. Anymore. You raised an issue that I don't mean to interrupt you. Sorry.
No, you're
but
good.
But when you said you're probably going to buy it anyway because of your daughter, it makes me think oftentimes about the delicate dance that developers have to do. I didn't mean that to be such an alliterative sentence, but it just worked out that way. When it comes to developing content that appeals to existing fans and also attracting new ones. And we played Pokemon when it first came out. It really dramatically appealed to us. And then we continued to play it for 20 years.
Yep.
But over that 20-year time span, we started with the first title and continued to play them. But some people's first game was Pokemon Black and White.
Yeah.
So those people didn't go through that same two-decade-plus game loop. And so your daughter and my daughter, they both played around with Sun and Moon, but neither of them could read. So it wasn't that rewarding of an experience. So this is really like their Pokemon Silver. And
yeah,
for them, it could be just as meaningful as Red and Blue were to us. So the Pokemon Company has to then say, how much are we going to provide fan service to the people who've been supporting us for all this time? And how much are we going to try to recreate the experience of the original, recapture lightning in a bottle for the people who this is going to be their very first Pokemon game? And I don't know what the answer to that is, because you can't keep going this way of reinventing without at some point alienating the people who have already played it, or failing to attract the people who haven't played it yet.
Yeah.
So do you think maybe we're on the precipice of the Breath of the Wild? In my long-standing habit of likening this back to Zelda, like I've been doing this entire time, are we at that Breath of the Wild moment where they're going to have a dramatic reinvention of Pokemon?
No. I mean, this game sold like hotcakes. Why would they? I mean, it makes no sense for them to change the formula that is making them the number one, like, the number one IP on the planet. And if this game sold poorly or below expectations, I would say, yeah, maybe we'll see that. But the fact that the big bonus game that we got was a rehash of Mystery Dungeon that looks worse, in my opinion, which I don't even want to get into. I don't think the Pokemon Company is changing direction anytime soon. They did on the GameCube. They really did with Colosseum and XD. Those were, in my opinion, more revolutionary Pokemon titles than what we're seeing with Sword and Shield. They did things dramatically different, especially XD, which is still a fun game. I absolutely agree. I'm guessing those games didn't sell anywhere near as many copies as they were hoping. So
I'm sure.
That being said, no, I don't think they're going to do it. But for the love of God, it's 2020. How do we not have voice acting in a kid's game at this point? Like, I have to read every line of text to my daughter, which is fine. I don't mind. It's a kind of like a bonding experience to a certain degree. She cannot enjoy the game on her own whatsoever. Like, she cannot. She's getting close to a point where she can start the reading process. But that would have been a huge quality of life upgrade from this game, and I'm shocked we haven't seen it. So maybe some baby steps, Game Freak. I'd be happy with some baby steps. Some voice acting would be fine. And then I'd shut up a little bit more. But I don't think we're going to see this revolutionary next step in the Pokemon franchise when they don't need to. There's no incentive for them to do it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's my thought. Please don't burn my house down. I do enjoy Pokemon. I'm not like, I hate Sword and Shield. I'm disappointed. That's all I'm going to say. And if you enjoy it, I'm thrilled you enjoy it. I would never tell you to stop playing. I would never boycott Game Freak. I would never put one of those terrible hashtags I've seen floating around Twitter. That's not who I am.
That's not Amiibo Jason's style.
I'm playing Golden Sun right now on the Game Boy Advance. Like, top tier graphics and stuff really don't, like, mean a whole lot to me.
Jason's a lover, not a fighter.
I just want to see more from this franchise I've been supporting since I was 10. I really do. I'm sick of seeing the same thing over and over and over and over again. I don't need 500 new Pokemon. I just want to see something different. That's all. That's my thought.
Now, I know that you mentioned Mystery Dungeon. This one's now called Mystery Dungeon Rescue Team DX.
Yeah.
I look at a lot of these remade games, these remakes, that for fans of the original one, it just seems like a cheap cash grab. But I now have a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old who were not even a twinkle in my eye when I played the first Mystery Dungeon.
Yeah.
So the re-release of this game is, the way that I perceive it, a way for a new generation to experience something that I played when I was young that they cannot play because it's not available to them in the way that I played it. Was that a Game Boy Advance game?
Yeah, it was GBA.
See, I played it on the Game Boy Advance. If I wanted to share that experience with my kids... Actually, the first game my daughter ever played was Mystery Dungeon. She didn't know what she was doing. I just handed her one of my extra DXs, and that happened to be the game that was in it. And she walked around not knowing what she was doing, but she liked the Pokemon art. So there's that.
Yeah.
Now, for her to see this game and remember a time that she was walking around with that character, it's going to have dramatically more appeal to her than it did to me. Just a brief history of my experience with the original version of this game. I bought it because at the time there were no other games really to lure my attention away. Sure. And I wanted something that I could kind of needle away at. The game was not bad. I have nothing against the game. If you love the game, I have nothing against you. But I was a mid-20s adult man, and I played the game for probably something like 30 to 40 hours. And at some point, probably very early on, maybe 2 or 3 hours in, I was judging myself. I'm like, why am I playing this game? This is not something that was made for me. This is not something that was meant to hold my attention. This is busy work. This is something that I really should be doing something productive and not wasting my time twiddling my thumbs with this juvenile, subpar Pokemon experience. And so I eventually left it feeling ashamed and disgraced that I had ever picked it up in the first place.
Just remember, I want you to remember this too. Think of those feelings. This is a remake of that in an art style that, in my opinion, looks like a mobile game, and it's the same price as Breath of the Wild.
It is? It's a full price game?
It's $60.
What? Okay, now even the original wasn't that much money. I will confess, I do like the art style. I think the art style has appeal to me.
Oh, I hate it. So much.
That is not a $60 game if it is a straight-up remake of the original one, which was not even that. I get that you need to make some money to justify the development costs of redoing this whole game. That's fine. Make yourself the money. Maybe you don't want to devalue a Pokemon title, so you need to give it that price tag because, on the one hand, you know people will pay it, and on the other hand, you don't want to give the impression that some Pokemon games are not worth as much as others. And if you're going to iterate upon this or create some sequels to this, and then all of a sudden the price skyrockets from $30 to $60, people are going to be shocked. Or you don't want to devalue the overall price of a brand new Switch game. I get it. So you're in a little bit of a sticky wicket from a marketing standpoint. But to people who remember paying $30 for that game, that's a big ask.
$60, but like, wow. I said, I'm not gonna, I not my cup of tea, Mystery Dungeon. I'm sure if it's yours, I'm sure it's worth $60, but this is where we are with Pokemon right now. There is a lot of money to be spent, and this one is quick. The turnaround on this one, March 6th, this one's coming out. Like, $60 full-fledged AAA priced game announced and released within 2 months. That's where we are right now.
I think, if again, you haven't played this game, for those of you guys who haven't played it, sorry, Jason.
No, you're good.
They named it Mystery Dungeon Rescue Team DX, but the DX, what you don't know, it stands for Mystery Dungeon Rescue Team Busy Work, which is describes the entire experience of playing this game. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's it. I mean, I have nothing else to say on the topic. Again, I am not the demographic for this game. So that being said, I don't want people to think that I'm absolutely crapping on Pokemon, because I am not trying to be that guy right now. I'm just not. So again, please don't burn my house down. I love all of you Pokemon fans out there. I sincerely do. And I think that's it. I have really nothing else to say on the subject. I'm disappointed, and that's it. TJ, any closing thoughts on the Pokemon discussion?
I think that does it for me, too. Before we call it a day, do you want to weigh in real fast on whether or not you think there's any truth to these rumors of the perpetual rumors of a 2020 Switch Pro?
I think it's happening. I think it's going to be coming out at some point this year. It's going to be fully backwards compatible with the Switch. I think it's going to be a nominal upgrade from what we have now, 1080p display. If I had to guess, it's going to be able to get a smooth 1080 60 docked in a 1080 30 in handheld. And I think that would be fine. I think this holiday season is going to be Nintendo's biggest hurdle with the Switch that we've ever seen, unless they do something, because they've never had to compete with new hardware neck and neck. The PS4 and the Xbox One were out for 2 years, 3 years before the Switch came out. So the Switch had this golden opportunity to be right there with no competition that wasn't already there for years. So I think this is really going to push Nintendo like they've never been pushed with this system. So with the PS4 and the Xbox, whatever the heck they're calling it now. PS5, excuse me. So that being said, I think it's happening. And I'm excited for it. And I've mentioned this before, there are certain games that, well, yes, they can technically run on the Switch. I think it's kind of a stretch saying they can run on the Switch. So I would like to see some improvements on some AAA games. And I think we've mentioned it before. Once we have the PS5 and this new Xbox, it's going to be increasingly difficult for third parties to make titles for both consoles, unless they are severely underpowered on the other consoles. So
yeah,
that's my thought. I think it's happening.
If it does, then I think it's going to happen way ahead of the other consoles in an attempt to get out in advance of them, to scoop up some money before people's wallets are entirely depleted. So it would be something like a summer drop or just way ahead of everybody else so that Nintendo still doesn't have to compete.
Yeah.
Or what I think is probably more likely, they're gonna put it off till next year.
I don't see that happening.
You might be right. Everything that you said makes complete sense to me, and I would not be surprised if you are right. But I think that they still, as you said, it would be a big challenge to compete with those other two heavy hitters. I don't think that they want to do that. They're going to try to undercut them by getting ahead of it or by being so far removed from it that they're not getting swept up in that tidal wave.
It's fascinating seeing how far ahead mobile chipsets are right now in comparison to what's in the Switch. And I feel like I've said this before on a podcast, but when the Switch came out, it was already underpowered compared to the updated Tegras that NVIDIA had out. And here we are 3 years later. There are some pretty spectacular things out there right now. So from a mobile chipset standpoint, there's some fascinating things Nintendo could do. They could beef that thing up to 4K right now if they truly wanted to. So I await Nintendo and see what they do. I would love to have something in time of like for Breath of the Wild 2 that would take advantage of new hardware to some degree. So that's my thought.
Switch is, Nintendo is still the only company making money on consoles. And that's what's, I think, holding them back from being on the same level. Because you can afford to sell an Xbox and a PlayStation at a loss because those companies make money from other products. But Nintendo only makes money off of video game related content or video game related products. So they kind of need to be able to make money off of the Switch, which means that unless they're going to dramatically increase the price, they have to consider the expense of the hardware that they use as well, which I believe contributes to why it's still so underpowered, is that they're not willing to sell it at a loss, and they know that there's a consumer threshold for how much they're willing to spend on a Nintendo console.
For a pro, I think if they could sell it at $400, they'd have a lot of buyers, and I think they could do it in a way they'd still make money.
I think so, too.
And I'd feel comfortable $399, $349, somewhere there. I'd be happy to pay that for a beefed-up Switch, but only time's going to tell. I think E3 is when it's going to get announced, and it's going to be a late summer release. I think it's going to come out very quickly after E3. But Nintendo's got to, I think, save that for E3. Breath of the Wild 2 on the show floor on a Switch Pro, that's going to be the big news of the year.
That's a compelling prediction.
So
I'd be on board with that.
TJ, I would love to keep talking. I really would. I still have not gotten my Ring Fit in yet today, and it's 10:30 almost here. So I have an hour and a half to get this these calories burned. So before I do that, where can the good folks find you?
Check me out on the Nintendo Wire YouTube channel, or find me on Twitter at Custom Conquest.
All right, and you can find me on Twitter at AmiiboJason. More and more lately, I've been posting about my retro game collection. Finished my N64 collection, which I mentioned last week. I've moved on to another console, which I'll talk about later. I have a video coming out, I'm hoping, this weekend. I'm going to be snowed in, so I'm going to be doing nothing but making content. I have a video coming out describing some of that, so stay tuned for that. You can find that right here on the Nintendo Wire YouTube channel, if that's where you're watching this. If this is even going up there, I'm not even sure. Or, like I said, you can find me on Twitter at NinWire and NintendoWire.com. But, like I always say, until next time, guys, stay wired in.
Thanks for playing.
My house is gonna get burned down, isn't it?